I finally got to start playing Grand Theft Auto V.
You asshole!
I know. It's
you
it's,
poor bourgeois PS3 owning motherfucker.
Xbox 360, I buy American, please.
Oh, God.
No, it's just so funny because I'm actually writing for a video game magazine now, and we're doing this thing where you put in your votes for the top 10 games of the year, and we're going to tally them up, and they will be Omni Gamer, the magazine I work for, their official top 10 games of the year. And I hadn't played Grand Theft Auto, and I had it. I bought it. But I hadn't played it. And I was like, I know this is going to be in my vote. Like, theoretically, that's pretty much how it's supposed to go.
It belongs there.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I'm the video games are art guy, you know, and everything you read about Grand Theft Auto and just the stereotypes.
Punch a hooker in the cunt.
Right. Here's what's funny about it. That is absolutely this game. And it is magnificent. It is
cunt punting is involved in GTA 5?
Oh, I bet you can do it while flying a helicopter.
I mean, yeah, exactly. You do. No, that's what's funny about it. You don't do it while flying a helicopter. You do it while working a crane and taking garbage out to the street. Like,
they're cold women.
Yeah. The mundane things they get you to do in this game, and they try to ply it off as funny or fun. That's why it's magnificent. They trick you. There's this level I'm on where I'm on a ship. And part of the thing that you do, you're casing the joint.
Right.
And as part of it, you get in one of the freighter trucks that picks up the crates, the boxes,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
You're lifting them, and you take it over to the right center, and you drop it down. And if you don't put it in the right place, well, you gotta pick it up and start again, because the foreman doesn't like that. And then you go, and you get in a crane, and you do the same thing in the crane. And you're casing the joint, but mostly you're just doing somebody's shitty job. But it's got a good soundtrack, so you think it's fun. It's brilliant trickery. It's very, very good.
Awesome. What was that? What, the website that you're writing that for?
I write for Omni Gamer, relevant to gamers, ladies and gentlemen. Very, very good stuff. Worth it. Worth your time.
The only problem that I had, I didn't get a chance to play it yet, but I've seen the graphics, and I've seen all the stuff that they offer. The one thing that pissed me off was I saw the box art for it. I was like, look at that. They got Kate Upton on the cover of the box. I was just like, they're paying out some money. And then I find out they're trying to lie their way through it and say that it's not Kate Upton. And it's so obvious that it is. Do you know who I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah.
Like, you look at that cover shot, and she's given the peace sign, and it's her and her blonde curviness.
I know the shot. I'm not as familiar with Kate Upton, so maybe I missed it. I don't know.
Sports Illustrated cover.
No, sure.
Yeah.
I know who she is. I don't.
Right, but it's,
I haven't yet masturbated to her.
Oh, you're missing out, dude.
Oh, yeah, you really are.
I'm not saying I won't.
I'm telling you right now, it's going to change your life.
I'm such a Christina Hendricks guy all the way.
Those are great as well.
I will not fault you for that.
But why do you have to make choices? Why can't we, I hate to be the little El Paso taco girl, but why can't we have both?
Why not both? Well, if we could lift you up in a celebration and honoring of a Mexican heritage, we would.
We'd do it. Oh. We'd place you on a pillowy bosom.
But you guys don't work out.
Well, I was going to say we're both fat assholes.
Yeah. So.
And on that note, welcome to I Mean This As a Friend. I'm Tim.
I'm Phil.
And I'm Chris.
We found Phil.
Hi.
Hey, Phil.
He was underneath the couch
the whole time.
A remote control.
I was deep in your hearts the whole time.
Clogging our arteries.
I found him sleeping underneath my kitchen table with a half-eaten stick of butter.
Do you have any more butter?
No, I'm out of butter because of you. But anyway, moving right along. That actually, the reason why I said under the kitchen table with a stick of butter, I don't know why I gestured with this penknife. I need to put it down.
please stop shaking that.
My
those are you.
He was waving a knife at him.
For Thanksgiving, I went up and I visited my folks in Gainesville, my family in Gainesville, Georgia, and I have an Uncle Boots, and his name is Lamar, but everyone called him Uncle Boots because we're from the South.
Right.
So,
go on.
There's a story in family legend that when he was a kid, he would go down in the middle of the night to the refrigerator, and he would eat a stick of butter like it was a candy bar.
Oh my! I've actually heard those before. But it was like
the 50s, so yeah. It wasn't like butter nowadays. It was like really artery clogging shit back in the day.
And there wasn't like a good excuse for it. It's not like he was climbing Mount Everest and that was the only way he could get through the night.
Right.
He was just going in and fat assery.
And he would fall asleep on the chairs under the table.
You hear about that with older families. My ex's family, you'd hear about her dad, when he was that age, would eat raw hamburger meat. Very common.
Oh.
And that's far more, and assured me that that was a fairly common thing back then, because it was, and he said, and you could, because it wasn't filled with all these, you know, pesticides and preservatives and blah, blah, blah. You could absolutely do it. And he lamented it. He said if he trusted beef, he would absolutely keep doing it. But that was his thing. So that's, you hear about that kind of shit.
Well, if you got it directly from the butcher, as if you were seeing the animal killed in front of you, the chance that it was going to get contaminated with E. coli or salmonella, much, 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 much lower than if you were getting it from the store. Because when you think about it, when you get it from a store, it's not just passing from a butcher's hands to your hands, not even just the prep work person's hands. It's going through, like, I want to say it's like chlorine and water because it's been sitting there for a little bit.
Yeah.
It's getting washed off with filthy water that they've regurgitated, that they've washed shit off of. And I'm not saying figurative shit. Actual shit.
We're going to be flowing clips from Fast Food Nation throughout this podcast, I hope.
So you kids know.
I think the moral of this story, though, is that Tim thinks me of as his Uncle Boots.
If I had to describe someone in my own life that reminded me of my Uncle Boots, he got that nickname because he did a really great impression of a stray dog. And the dog's name was Boo.
Oh, okay. I was about to say that I almost
left it before
you
that.
You have explained nothing.
I know. I have more questions than when we started.
As you were saying, Lamar Boots.
Well, you know, we're all from Southern families. I mean, yeah. Everyone here has a Bubba in their family, right?
I do not.
You don't have a Bubba?
Not that I'm aware of.
I have, the closest I have to a Bubba is... my family currently resides in the South, but they're all from, like, the Northeast. They're
Yankees.
Right.
Yeah.
But the closest we get to Southernism is we get that good old-fashioned racist Thanksgiving discussion.
Oh, sure.
Where everything Obama has ever done wrong is placed upon my shoulders, and I am forced to defend him as the pinko mixed-race commie that wanted everyone to die at Benghazi.
Well,
so
that's what you get for coming out to your family.
That's
really
coming
your
out
own
as
fault.
A Democrat,
right?
Or
that's
liberal.
Really your own
I mean,
fault.
That's dangerous.
It really is.
That's
on a yeah. I had a there was a little casual racism, as I like to.
You sit out on some nice wicker furniture on the patio. You get a lemonade, maybe some ribs, and then you say, "Hey, Mexicans."
It was more or less like that.
Yeah.
You know? Well, it was just, you know, like on the... Like, I don't want to get into it, but
I'm wearing a Hawaiian shirt.
Hawaiians.
Yeah.
Or Samoans.
Samoans.
Girl Scouts.
One thing that we did...
Delicious cookies.
One thing that we did want to talk about, a suggestion that I had for this evening, was worst karaoke experience.
Oh, Lord. There are so many. There really are...
Oh, yeah. Well, especially in the circles we travel in, you know, I find that the longer I live and the more people I meet, the more I'm surprised by the fact that not everyone does karaoke. In fact, quite a massive portion of the population loathe it and find it to be very obnoxious and stupid.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas we kind of, that's if generally me, if I'm going out drinking, I go out drinking and do karaoke.
Oh, yeah.
I can't just go to a bar and sit and drink. I get bored, and I'm like, you don't have a microphone around here?
It's also the choice of, would I rather be drinking and then trying to yell over other people talking or yell over music that's blaring?
Yeah.
Or, because they have it mic'd for karaoke, usually you can kind of have a little bit of conversation in back, and you're also waiting to go up, so you're having a good time while you're singing and while you're drinking.
And if you can hold a tune, it's a nice icebreaker.
The bad stories, it's just, there's so many bad situations where it was the wrong Ice Ice Baby at the wrong moment, or the white guy.
Opens up the wrong memory.
Oh, God.
It's really, you know what? It's not even Ice Ice Baby so much. But I totally agree that that's where you typically go in your head. But mostly what it is Baby Got Back.
There's a lot of Baby Got Back. There's a lot of Don't Stop Believin'.
Well, oh, of course. Yeah, that goes the same. But Baby Got Back just holds a special thrill of loathing inside of me just because of my karaoke experiences.
Mm. Actually, do you want to know, more recently, my worst experiences have always been the girl who has 8 of her friends there, and they're all there for her. It may or may not be a bachelorette party, but she's getting on stage, and she's not smiling. And then you realize, as she puts down her Long Island, and she holds the mic very carefully, she looks up at the crowd, and then you hear, dun 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 dun. I'll find someone like you.
Oh, yeah.
I would love for you to love me. I swear, I love you so.
All right, for God's sakes.
Point made, we're only men.
Point made, Jesus. We're human beings here.
Instead.
And she
cries, and her friends give her a big round of applause.
That's the
number one rule. I want to break up with a girl, Jesus.
Yeah.
That's the number one rule to me about karaoke, is you don't sing a song you're too emotionally invested in.
And I think, for me, like, I don't sing a lot of the karaoke, and part of the reason why is I don't like my singing voice.
You're not bad. As someone who's heard you.
No. I don't like my singing voice at all. I have a hard time editing the podcast because I have a hard time listening to my own voice.
I get that.
Same here.
The first time I went out to the karaoke was when I was 16. And there was a girl, it was a girl's birthday party, and I went to the birthday party, I forget what restaurant it was, I went to the birthday party, and she really liked me, and I had, like, just rejected her.
Oh, no.
Like, 2 or 3 days before, but I, trying to be a nice guy, or thinking that I was doing the right thing,
right.
She really still wanted me to come to this birthday party, and so I go there, and she... It's not just that she sang I Will Survive. It's not that she sang it directly at me.
Which she did.
Both of which she did. It was, in fact, how everyone in the restaurant/bar supported and rallied behind her.
Oh, they were just cheering her on.
They were just cheering her on. And that was the problem that I had.
Sure.
And I had sang karaoke that night. I sang a lot of karaoke that night. I sang Tie Your Mother Down. I sang...
I don't know. That's a song. Who's that?
Tie Your Mother Down by Queen. Tie Your Mother Down. Tie Your Mother Down. This is why I don't sing karaoke. It's all right.
Those are the lyrics.
Those are kind of the lyrics. I sang that, Much Too Young to Feel This Damn Old. The other emotionally scarring event of that evening was I started singing I Just Died in Your Arms Tonight.
Oh, wow.
Wait. Apparently, all the thing I knew was the chorus.
Yes!
Yeah, I had no idea how the verse was.
Must have been something you said.
And as a guy who was a karaoke DJ, I've got to tell you, every fifth person that would come up, they would ask for "I Just Died in Your Arms," or something like that, and they only know the chorus,
being the hyper conscientious, you know, self aware performer that I am, not like individual, but like performer, like when I'm on stage, I'm very very aware as to how I look and how I sound, you know, and just completely and totally falling flat on my face. And sucking at life in general. I did not do it for over 10 years until I went to McDonough's and my girlfriend talked me into doing it. And that was like one of the first times that you had stepped in. I think that's when I met you.
I think we met. Yeah, we met at McDonough's. Story. I know that for sure.
Origin story.
That's where we met.
That's full fucking circle right there.
Yeah,
God damn it.
But those are the kind of nights that you wish someone had written a song. A popular song that was on karaoke called "Jesus Lady, I'm Fucking Sorry." someone get on that.
I wish someone would write a song called "Why Don't You Get Off My Nuts." A simple, slow 80s power ballad.
Get off my nuts! Get off my nuts now!
that. I'm sure there's an Elton John song called that, right?
Probably. They call REO Speedwagon. They're not doing anything.
They're just hanging out.
Chris, your worst karaoke experience.
Oh, God. I remember it was... I want to say it was within the year, because there were two specific things going on that night. One was... it was a packed house over at the rail, and I was keeping company with Wrath Nasty, Spoon Man, if you go there a lot. And we showed up, and we were already, like, I think 23 on his list, which, I mean, you know, a busy karaoke night, no, that's nothing unusual. Sure. But the reason we were I was number 23 was because it was this goddamn... I guess convention of doctors or something was in town, which the way I look at alcoholism, there's a good middle area of alcoholism of people you can trust. There are people who are way too into alcohol all the time, and you can't trust them because they just make bad decisions and they run over dogs and they drive everywhere drunk. They're bad people.
Yeah.
And then there's me, where I'm in that nice middle area, where I drink enough on a regular basis that I know how to not turn into a complete fucking asshole. Mm. And then there are people that I would say are equally awful, which is people who don't drink enough. So the moment they cross that threshold for the first time, they've decided that they're going to go fucking nuts, balls to the wall, because they just got done seeing The Hangover Part 2, and they decide, oh my God, that's just like Karen! So... that's going on. There's all these shit-faced, collegiately educated doctors making awful decisions and sexually harassing people. And they're in there, like, some of them are young, some of them are old. I remember it was the weirdest thing. Every time I see a drunk over the age of 30 in a blazer, I just get instantly annoyed. They look like Caddyshack villains to me. Like, I fucking hate them. I look at them and I'm just like, they're gonna shut down the rec center. I'm gonna punch them in the throat. Like, these motherfuckers. And essentially what would happen is one of them would try to go on stage when someone else was on stage, which is, first off, a no-no. If you don't know that person, do not do that. It's the most rude thing ever. The other thing that was going on was there was this guy... And, like, it's one thing to be physically unaware and then apologetic. Like, I get it. Every now and then I drink. Oh, I bumped you while you were holding your drink. You spilled a little bit of your beer. My bad. I'm sorry. If I spilt enough of your beer, I will buy you another beer. That's how nice of a guy I am. This guy's just fucking throwing elbows everywhere to the point that this... bartender chick I know this day was in the corner just enjoying her time. She was out drinking with her brother, and she was not the kind of person to be fucked with. So things just get loud and angry all throughout the bar, and like, I'm trying to explain to this guy, like, dude, stay the fuck away from her. Like, she's gonna jab you in the throat with, do you know what are they called, those little, they're not brass knuckles, but they look like a cat head. They're sharp, pointy ears.
My God.
It's a female self-defense item.
Yeah.
And it's shaped like a cat's head, and it has two holes in it, and you put them on your knuckles, and it's like a sharp, pointy death tool that you use to stab groping men.
Excellent.
She's got those in her hands, like, the next time this motherfucker comes in here, and I'm just like, I don't want people to bleed at the rail. I like this place. So I'm trying to keep this drunk doctor far the fuck away from her, and I probably spent 90 minutes of my time doing it. I was barely able to enjoy any of my songs. Like, being tense and drunk is not a fun feeling at all. And eventually it got to a point where, like, they would get on stage and then they would say their shitty songs and dedicate it to Bo or whoever the fuck graduated that day from asshole school. But I just remember being tense and angry, and they were cock blocking me. I was furious, and that's my story.
I think it's definitely any time a girl has asked me to sing the male part to Need You Now
or Summer Lovin', or you know, Evanescence, or something like that. That's just the, when you work in the booth, you become this girl's first choice to sing a song with you, and that's tough because I'm never interested in duets, even with girls that I might want to sleep with or even date. I'm just not a duet guy, and they're never good. They're never good duets. Like I they're never fun.
Phil, can you put me down for Kid Rock and Sheryl Crow again?
Right. And you get asked that one a lot. And
that song didn't happen.
I don't know what you're talking about.
We have a standing rule here, and I mean this as a friend.
those are the worst. Almost worse than that, though, was the time a guy asked me to sing with him. Not because of any queer thing. I would love to have sung with him if he was gay, because at least he would probably have some level of style. No, this guy was this great big gangbanger of a dude who everyone told me later probably wanted to fuck me. I don't know. He wanted to sing "I'll Make Love to You." That was his thing. He comes up to me and says, "You sing real good, man. Let's sing 'I'll Make Love to You' for the ladies." And I went, and I'm hammered, so I'm like, "Yeah, for the ladies." And we go, and we
little did he realize that "ladies" was a euphemism for Phil's butthole.
Yeah, pretty much. And I
got so much pussy.
I get my mic,
wink, wink.
And he's got his mic, and I'm just singing up back. I said, "I'll sing back up. You take it, man. It's your song." And he's got his mic, and I'm singing into mine, and I notice his mic, you know, veering into my field of vision, and he's putting his mic to my mouth. So I'm singing into my mic and his mic at the same time.
Like, so now you're doing like the White House correspondence thing where you have multiple mics in front of you.
What the fuck are you doing? And I'm like, "Come on, just sing your thing, man." He's like, "Yeah, but you sing it so good." And I'm like, "Okay." And at the end of the thing, he stumbles, and the mic takes me in the mouth, and that's where this came from. I have a chip in one of my incisors, and it comes from taking a mic to the mouth. And he had no idea that he did it. That is
such a Phil thing to have happen.
Right. And
the sort of thing would only
happen. Karaoke scars.
And I didn't notice it until the next morning, and he certainly didn't know. I mean, I remember taking it. There was a little knock, you know, it wasn't a big deal. And he was like, "I'm sorry." And I'm like, "Yeah, fuck it." And the next day, I remember like going, "Huh, that feels different." That's not how I remember that one. But
that's not how I remember my mouth.
That's not how I.
I hate teeth injuries. Like those are so.
I also remember a time me and my friend Katie Whitaker, just an adorable lesbian.
I know her.
So cute. And she and I were just plastered. We were plaster buddies, and we would just win because when we came out, we just get violently drunk. And we would hit on the same kind of chicks, pretty much. And we had so much fun with it. And one night, there was this pair of cougars. And I realized it because we were hammered when we got in touch with these cougars. And I realize now in retrospect, they were probably less cougars and more sad old women. but in my memory, my gin-fogged memory...
They're out on the hunt.
Oh, yeah. And one of them, it was her birthday. And we basically were talking our way into the other one's bed. Like, she was on one of them and I was on the other one. And they were visiting from out of town or something. And they were going to take us back to... They were staying in a nice hotel or something. And they were going to take us back to their hotel. And I was going to take the one chick and she was going to take the other. And that was the whole plan.
With the plan.
Right. And it was packed in there. It was crazy go nuts. And we got separated, she and I. And I remember my cougar, I got separated from her. And I looked around and I couldn't find her. I went, "Fuck it." It's actually where any of fans of mine recognize the sex versus cheeseburger joke. It's where the idea came from. Because I was like, "Well, I can't get any tail. I guess I'll go have a cheeseburger." Like, that was my right. And I remember sitting.
Go to plan.
Yeah, and I remember sitting at home by myself, drinking soda and eating a cheeseburger and watching a movie and going, "This is pretty good." But I also thought, you know, well, Katie's getting laid at least. And I met her the very next night, same bar, same McDonough's, and we saw each other. And I remember, I'm sober now, and I'm feeling very relieved that I did not go home with said cougar. Like, immediately, it was like, "Oh, that's good. That's for the best. And I remember seeing, there's Katie, and she's all the way across at the other end of the sidewalk. She sees me, and I see her, and it was like the end of Grease with Rizzo and Kanicki. It's like, I'm not pregnant! I didn't fuck her! Did you fuck her? No, I didn't fuck her! Yay! Like, it was an 80s movie, so we swing each other, and just we were so happy that we
don't did. You
yeah, it was, about so, me. It was a victory. It was a victory. It was a dry penis victory, if such a thing exists.
No, no, they exist. Yeah, I call it high school. I didn't see a lot of action in high school. Looking back on it, I'm eternally grateful.
Yeah. Oh, things are better.
Because there were some fucking crazies.
Oh, things are better. Around. Things are better.
One girl I had a crush on fucked a goat. Like, you heard about that later on. I was just like, hey, remember that cute little goth girl with the piercings and, like, she used to wear the skirt? And I'm like, yeah. And he's like, dude, check this out, goat. And I'm like, that's bad. Not even making that part up, but that's...
I'm going.
I would much rather watch her fuck the goat.
Yeah, and listen to that joke
again.
Do you want to know the truth, though? She really did fuck a goat.
No, no,
a girl.
Really, no.
Like, that part's real.
I never questioned that for a second.
Nope.
You had to be there.
I question your sanity at the placing of such a joke.
Speaking of sanity,
at least she didn't have kids.
No, I'll allow it. No,
that's
that
not
was,
bad.
That
that's
wasn't
bad.
Bad. That wasn't
that's
bad.
That's not bad. That's not bad. Right.
It's not bad.
That's... Can I use that screwdriver?
Yeah. I got one myself.
Awesome.
So step.
Hail Caesar.
Next.
Hail Caesar.
Next on the agenda, comics and comic books, because you guys are both comics. But comic books is the next topic, and I just wrote down just a couple of things, because and we've talked about it, I think it was a long time ago, when we first started the podcast, but you have not, at the time, you had not read Watchmen.
I'm 25% through the book, and I haven't watched, I've watched the entire movie, but I know... And I skipped ahead towards the end to see what was going on a little bit with the book.
Well, but it's not going to... But it's not... That they changed it.
Oh, yeah. They changed a lot of it.
Giant
fucking
ending.
Squid and shit.
Yeah, the psychic vagina squid.
Well, but you know what? And that's what's... And it was a good change. I don't hate on the movie quite as much as everyone else.
Yeah,
I thought it was pretty decent.
Yeah, I think... Well, especially going into it, like, it was in development hell for, like, 20 years.
God, forever.
And my thing about it was like, just make the fucking movie.
Yeah.
Can we just get over this so we can move on with
and it wasn't
Terry
bad.
Gilliam was on it at one point,
right. and if they had kept and the mutant vagina squid actually works in the comic, it absolutely works.
Yeah.
And on a movie, it would not.
Well, you'd have to explain like spoilers. There's a too late for that anyway.
Yeah,
but in the comic, there's. The way that specifically came about,
right?
That's extraordinarily specific. You can't just spring on an audience, oh, by the way, giant psychic vagina squid, coming at you,
right.
Full blasting,
full blast. Oh god!
But you started to read it.
Yeah, and I mean, from what I've read thus far, I mean, it's really good. You get those details, as far as comics go, like. I went through a patch where I was dating a freelance artist for like 2.5 years. So she exposed me to all the really good stuff. And like, I remember she had this entire book. It was all the production art and stories from the Batman animated series.
Oh, very
and
cool.
I just remember reading that book and I'm just like, so we're dating now. I just want to let you know that we're dating now.
Just so you know, I made you my woman.
Yeah.
That's happened.
But outside of Watchmen, I think we can go ahead and perhaps lay down some ground rules. And as far as favorite comic book, and we can lump it into a series. I guess what I'm going for is maybe something that we have not heard of, but like a personal favorite that you have.
Oh,
so
okay.
Like not, let's say Watchmen, not League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, not. I'll actually go, even though my favorite comic is Maximum Carnage, the Spider-Man series. It's always been one of my favorites. I will not submit that. So something maybe a little bit off the beaten path that that you enjoyed.
Okay, so purposefully a little more obscure.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, I'd have to go with Mouse Guard then.
Mouse
Guard,
really good.
Very charmingly done. It's funny because it's just basically a fantasy story. It's a Lord of the Rings style kind of fantasy epic It just so happens that the characters are all mice, and it's charming because of that. You're like this is precious. That mouse has a broadsword. That's friggin' cute. And then they start, cutting people down, and just cutting people down, and getting cut down themselves.
Right, and it gets real.
Oh yeah, and it's really well done. And the first one, and they do it by seasons. And the first one is autumn, and it's in the minutes. I think it's 1126, something like that. It's something along those lines. It's very old, old world, and just beautifully done, and great story, great everything. So I like that. That one jumps out at me. I just got done reading Wanted. I don't know if that's not really obscure so much. They made a really shitty Angelina Jolie movie around it, which had nothing to do with
what?
The comic.
I really liked Wanted the movie.
It had nothing to do with the comic.
I don't care.
I don't know why they even needed the tie-in. Yeah, it had nothing to do with it.
I mean, it was just a lot of fun. I just really liked it.
Yeah. Well, it's a fascinating book. It's a really, really interesting take. It's basically the villains have taken over. They've killed off all the superheroes and they've taken over.
Oh, okay.
And it's fascinating. It's really, really interesting. And it's very bleak and very violent, and I had a lot of questions at the end because your hero's a villain. He's not a good dude, and not even in the charming, debonair Hannibal Lecter kind of way. He's a dick. Like, he's a real dick. And so at the end of it, it was an interesting, satisfying ending, but there was still that part of me going, why do I give a shit about this guy? You know?
Yeah.
Which I often do. Because I don't have a lot of sympathy for certain kinds of characters. The anti-hero, I'm very picky on.
Yeah, sure.
That's why while I'm playing Grand Theft Auto V, I'm filled with a lot of self-loving. It's really weird.
I'm terrible for stealing this car.
Yeah.
I'm terrible for paying this hooker for goods and services.
I'm just part of the problem. What the hell?
What am I doing to contribute?
It really is. I have to pause, and I rub the bridge of my nose, and I just throw my hands up and go, what the fuck?
You're the worst video game player I've ever heard in my life.
Yeah, I'm horrible. I can't enjoy myself.
Chris, you have a favorite quasi-obscure? It doesn't have to be, but...
Well, no, I would say that I'm going to say a tie, because the main comics I tend to follow are on the internet, but there was also a really amazing series that I'm not even all the way finished with. The first one would have to be Order of the Stick. It's an online webcomic, and it starts off... with it's Dungeons and Dragons, and they open it with it's third edition, and now we're edition 3.5, and they make all the jokes about this is how the game works, here are the mechanics, here are all the things you've experienced with your friends, really simple art. It's all stick figures.
Mm-hmm.
It's stick figures with coloring on them, and the thing that sets it apart is the storytelling. It's the only reason you watched. Really dynamic characters, really good storytelling, things that come out of nowhere, and you watch it and you're just like, it's honestly, it reminds me of a lot of really good, forgive me if I'm using this term incorrectly, but a lot of really good Joss Whedon stuff, where the characters are so diverse and they all serve a purpose, and the arc of the story implements them all in a very specific way that ties together, and I really, really thoroughly enjoyed it.
Order of the Stick?
Order of the Stick.
I mean, I remember Order of the Stick. I remember it used to.
Did
be
you
a,
finish it? I mean, it's
well,
still going,
I mean, it was a regular comic in Dungeon and/or Dragon magazine for near the end.
It's on the website. It's currently on right now.
I remember it having a lot of. I'm gonna have to take a look because I
the
remember
stuff they
it
published
being,
in Dragon magazine was a lot
right.
more like Dilbert.
I remember it just being kind of a fantasy gamer's funny comic.
Here's the thing, the arcs they do online, the website is www.giantitp.com, it's Giant in the Playground, so giantitp.com, and they've I think the guy's been doing the comics since something like 2007, 2008, so there's a lot of comic to read, but I just always, anytime they made a decision with one of the characters, like, they just take entire concepts of storytelling.
That's fascinating.
And they go, here's what we're going to do with that. And then they go to another thing.
I remember like, it being, I remember it being really, really funny. I just don't remember it having any kind of story arc or anything. I'll have to go check that out.
It's not particularly tragic, but you watch it and you enjoy it.
I don't remember any story. I mean, so that's, all of that's fascinating to me.
And then the other comic that I'm going to mention, I'm sure you've read this at some point, is it Grant Moore? The Boys. Are you familiar with The Boys?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, God. Let me look it up real quick. I want to say it's either Warren Ellis or Grant Morrison. It's essentially what it is the parody of all modern comics. Like it takes the step. It's the natural progression of The Watchmen in a lot of ways. Mm. Essentially what they did was they're like, all right, here's your DC Marvel universe. Here is how awful those characters actually are in this world. And the main characters, they go by The Boys, and essentially they work for the CIA, and they keep the superheroes in check, because the superheroes are these goddamn vigilantes with government funding that occasionally do just fucked up shit. They get away with sexual assault, they are pedophiles, they are binge drinkers. They ruin people's lives. Like, take every archetype and they go through them. They fuck with the X-Men. They fuck with Batman. Their version of Superman is Lex Luthor's perception of the world in a lot of ways. The idea no man should ever have this much power. This is how corrupt he actually is. It just takes everything, spins it on its head, and the main character is this badass British dude. The way they ride him, just as British as you possibly can get. He's got this big English bulldog that fucks everything. The main character in it looks exactly like Simon Pegg. Because more or less what happened is the artist who drew it saw Spaced with Simon Pegg. And he's just like, I like his accent. I like his face. This show is canceled. I'm just going to draw it off of him. Well, a couple of years later, Simon Pegg blows up, and he's just like, oh, shit, likeness rights. hey, Simon, can you do me a solid? And then Simon Pegg reads the comic, loves it. So when you get the complete volumes, Simon Pegg does the introduction to the first volume of it.
Nice.
Totally cool about
that's
it.
Solid, man.
But they, you read these stories, and the parody is crisp. It's bloody. It's totally NC-17. You enjoy it. It's sexual and violent in all the ways that, most things get wrong. Like, it's just the proper amount of innuendo balanced with the good old-fashioned ultraviolence, and I fucking love it.
Right on.
Excellent. The first thing that came to mind for me was, there's one, I was actually talking about it with a friend earlier today, called The Damned. And it takes place in Prohibition era or Depression era Chicago, and essentially it's the mobs are all run by demons, like actual.
Oh, huge, I know which one you're talking.
Yeah, I've heard of this. Yeah,
fucking demons, and they trade in souls and that sort of thing. And the main character is a guy named Eddie who's been cursed, and apparently to curse someone takes a lot of effort and energy, so he must have really pissed somebody off. But his curse is that he can't die. Or he'll be killed, but if anyone touches him, they take on the wound. So if his throat is cut, if someone touches him,
I feel like I've read this.
Their throat will be cut, and then they get up.
That sounds very familiar.
It was really good. There was another, the other comic that I was going to mention was these are both from Oni Press. It was just weird. Like, it was just really, really, really weird. No, it wasn't Oni Press, but The Umbrella Academy.
Oh, sure, yeah.
That was a really great one that I liked. It was, like, all these random... It was, like, kind of making fun of the X-Men.
Right.
But also not really trying to make fun of the X-Men. Like, it was definitely doing its own thing, but it was making fun of the X-Men. I think the guy from My Chemical Romance helped write that.
That wouldn't surprise me.
And
I remember that because I remember seeing ads for it in online or Wizard or something like that. And they'd throw My Chemical Romance. What the fuck does that have to do with anything?
What's going on?
I think it was my brother who pointed it out to me because he digs them.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, good for him. So before we started the podcast, we were talking as we were wont to do, And I wrote down worst Predator movie.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I maintain that they're all high class works of art.
Get the fuck out of my house.
I'll get you in my wrist blades.
Was there a Predator 3?
It was Predator, Predator 2,
and then Alien vs. Predator.
Alien vs. Predator, Alien vs. Predator 2, Predators.
Wasn't there also like Requiem?
Well, Requiem was Alien vs. Predator. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Alien vs. Predator got a lot of shit. And it, despite that, was not a horrible monster flick. It had a lot of holes. I will admit that. For example, the very first movie, they clearly set up that the predator species is attracted to heat, and they need heat to survive, and therefore they build their great temple
in Antarctica,
which makes no sense. I admit that, but it had lots of great fight scenes and some interesting characters, and they were not there, but they were on the right track. If they had really tried a little harder, it could have been decent. I wish they had just followed the original Alien vs. Predator miniseries, the thing that started it all. I wish they just followed that storyline. They could have done it easily. It was really well done. It was really good. But, yeah, they were all pretty
obscure. Kind of touching on obscure comics, one of my favorites that I read that I have not been able to find again since, Batman vs. Predator.
Oh my god, Yeah.
It was weird, it didn't make any sense, I hated...
It made no sense.
I hated the premise from the fucking goddamn get-go, but by the end of it, like, the Predators, like, Batman has earned their respect, and like...
Right.
And they, like, give him a sword.
Of course he has. Which Batman, in anything, it's just like, well, he has a Green Lantern ring now, or, you know...
But I would, but what's funny about that is, I read the Predator books, and the Alien vs. Predator novels and stuff, of which there were a handful, and the Aliens novels and stuff like that, and they really get into the culture of them and everything. But that's pretty much the plot line of every Predator and or Alien vs. Predator
mysterious
book.
Deaths, one
it's
person.
The mysterious death, the humans caught between the two, because the Predators actually plant alien eggs in different planets. They leave for a few decades, or
and they come back to hunt.
And they call, God, it's funny how it all comes back to you. they saw the two great preys were what they called hard meat, which were the aliens, and soft meat, which were humans. And they had all these elaborate rules, and it was a very Japanese samurai style kind of honor system, and they're big game hunters and all that stuff. But they all ended the same way. It was always the one human that ended up joining with the Predators to fight against the aliens, and by the end, he'd earned their respect, and they'd give him... That's the plot!
It's so fucking Dances with Wolves.
It really is. It's the same fucking thing.
Are you listening to this, Obama?
I wanna mention one thing, though, because Alien vs. Predator, the first one, does have a very special place in my heart, and I don't mean this in like a snarky or a pretentious way.
But your first handy, wasn't it?
Close enough. Me and my friend were sitting in the theater watching that movie, and there were certain scenes that we were just like, "Oh, that's awesome!" And then about middle of the way, we just started laughing through it because certain moments were just like, and then by the end of the movie. They are on that sled.
Yeah.
And God, they are going up the tunnel, and behind them is a fireball, and we couldn't have timed it better, but me and my friend, we clasped our hands together, we looked at each other, and we just knew it in our eyes what to say, so the explosion happens, the sled comes out, and we're just like, Rosebud!
And then you just started blowing each other.
Just,
hard in theater. So hard in the theater.
And the place was packed.
Opening night, I mean, that was perhaps a horrible time. But no one stopped us. That was also weird.
The slurping noises, it sounded like the feeding scene in Jurassic Park where they feed the steer to the raptors. It was like... At least that's how I think blowjobs are supposed to sound. I don't know.
I thought this was really simple, but I thought the worst Predator movie was Predator 2.
Yeah.
Because Danny Glover runs around the whole thing, and not once does he say, I'm getting too old for this shit.
Doesn't he?
I don't think so.
No, not in Predator 2.
He says it in Lethal Weapon, but he doesn't say it in Predator.
You know I love a franchise. I love Predator, and you know you'll love it when I love Predator... and haven't enjoyed a single one of the movies since, except for kind of Alien vs. Predator. Haven't enjoyed a single one of them, but still see them all in the goddamn theater in hopes that eventually they'll get it back on track. I saw Predators.
Predator was a masterpiece of 80s schlock.
Oh, a macho guy bullshit.
I mean, bicep close-up.
Oh, yeah.
Like, seriously, it starts off with Carl Weathers and Arnold Schwarzenegger having a handshake.
Oh, yeah.
With the mother Dylan, they have you pushing too many pencils. Like,
and it's such a quotable
movie.
Take
it easy on yourself, Dutch.
It's such a...
I could probably do
get
it...
Get to the chopper!
I could probably do it from beginning to end.
Get to the chopper. My personal favorite line is, hey man, you're bleeding. I ain't got time to bleed. Like, no, you do, because you're doing it right now.
My favorite... You're an idiot. In my opinion, the greatest macho guy moment in the whole film is the Indian guy, the Indian tracker.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and he's starting to pick up on what's going on, and the rest of them are in the dark, and they're all panicky, and one of them says, you know something. And he says, I'm scared, Pancho. And he says, bullshit! You ain't afraid of no man! And he looks at him, and this is the greatest macho line of all time. He says, there's something out there hunting us, and it ain't no man. We're all gonna die. And it's just... And you shiver. It's such a great macho line.
Oh, God. I liked him because he was also like, you know what? Fuck it.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. He turns around and goes,
I'm tired of
standing on the tree bridge.
I'm tired of running. Go ahead, rip out my spine. See if I care.
Pornstar was in like a half a dozen porns.
Was he?
After Predator.
I'm going to look this up.
Yeah, he was in some porn.
Well, apparently for the cast
same
of
dialogue,
Predator,
though. I want to know the same dialogue.
If you're in the cast of Predator, you either became a politician or a porn star.
Oh, my God. Oh, and the other one. Oh, I vined it, for God's sakes. One of the greatest lines of any movie, frankly, is... A bunch of slack-jawed faggots around here. This stuff will make you a goddamn sexual tyrannosaurus. Just like me.
Here, strap this to your sore ass.
And that is the moment that one of the characters laughs hysterically, but it's not quite as high and girlish as my laughter is. So.
Exactly. Well, on that note, we're going to wrap it up for this edition of I Mean This As a Friend. You can find us on iTunes and Facebook and Stitcher Radio.
Stitcher Radio!
Wow, that was harmony. Wow, I wasn't expecting that at all.
No one was.
By the way, we record this in my bedroom. We're not wearing any clothes.
Oh,
and,
it's so good.
A harmony is not expected.
Phil and I are in unison right now.
Very much so.
Who wants to play sock puppets?
Well, anyway, so I want to thank you for listening. Feel free to email us. I mean, this is the Gmail address is on the Facebook. So until then, I'm Tim.
I'm Phil.
I'm Chris.
And I mean this. We mean this.
We mean this.
We mean this as a friend.
No, but seriously, does anyone want to play sock puppets?
I'm always playing sock puppets. That's my secret, dog.
That's how you do it. You're always playing sock puppets.